Hi, it's Professor Liu. I wanted to let all of you know that right now we have a fall raffle at ArtProf, and you could maybe win a 30-minute portfolio critique from me. The value is $200, but you can buy one ticket for $1, and that might be all you need to win that critique. Or you can get this gigantic pile of art supplies. So please think about pledging. You guys can get a limit of 5 tickets per person. Just go to artprof.org. You will see on our front page, we do have a link that takes you to the raffle. We hope that you guys will check that out because that's pretty cool to get all those art supplies for $1. All right, we are going to do a QA today about everybody's favorite topic, life after art school, because that's a topic which I think for a lot of people is very sensitive, and that I also think, unfortunately, just does not really get talked about very much. And I think it's an important time in your life after you finish art school, how to move forward with your studio practice. And really, I think the way to consider it, when you're in art school, you're a pretty big fish in a really small pond. But when you make that transition to the professional world, you're a very small fish in an ocean. And that transition, I think, for a lot of students, it's very startling to do that. And so, one of the reasons why I wanted to do a live stream about this topic is because over the past few months, I just keep getting these super panicked messages from a lot of recent graduates. And I thought to myself, wow, why am I having the exact same conversation 18 times? It really seems like I have to put this information out there. If all these students are coming to me and asking me, oh my God, what do I do? I don't know what's going on. I feel really lost. And I thought, okay, if they need it, chances are there's a whole other population of art students who want this information too. Because I think what's hard about it is that a lot of schools have career services and programs like that, which you definitely should take advantage of. I feel that any resource that is available to you, definitely check it out. I mean, the worst case scenario is you check it out, it's not very helpful. That's really not the end of the world. But I just am sort of shocked at how much bad advice gets put out there for art school students, and how I think in a lot of ways I've seen at a lot of schools really sort of set students up to be very disappointed. And I think that's a bummer. I think that's not the fault of the students. I sort of tend to think that it's the fault of the culture of a lot of schools, that people just don't want to talk about things in realistic terms. And I've also noticed that a lot of people do not like to talk publicly about struggling, about things not being perfect. Because you know something? Most of the time they are not. And I think that social media really exasperates this because everybody's so busy trying to look successful and wonderful and happy. But I think the fact of the matter is, a lot of people don't feel that way most of the time. And for a lot of people who are trying to make a career in the arts, it is a day-to-day struggle. And I just really wish that more people would acknowledge that and stop pretending that everything's so easy. If you guys are just joining us, we're talking about life after art school. Please jump into the chat box, ask me your questions, all of those questions that you are afraid to ask in art school. I am going to answer them as best as I can because I think it's problematic that people don't talk about, for example, how to actually do the nuts and bolts after art school. I think you hear a lot of really annoying advice. You hear a lot of people say to you after you graduate, the world is your oyster. You can make it anything. I mean, yes, you should strive for that. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I think that there's so many just like really simple directives that recent graduates should be doing that nobody tells them to do. And so whenever I get these panic messages from my former students, I say to them, oh, just do this, this, and this. And I actually had one of them say to me the other day, oh my gosh, that is so obvious. That's common sense. I'm like, actually, it's not common sense. If it was common sense, you would have gone and done it without my advice. And so a lot of it is not super obvious. But then once somebody actually points it out to you, it actually makes a lot of sense. So the thing is, in my opinion, we should not have to reinvent the wheel. If I already have a lot of this information that I can share with the rest of you guys, I'm totally happy to do that. Because my thing is, I have no shame about admitting that working as an artist, making a career at it, it's a lot of work. And it takes a mental toll on you for the amount of time that it really exasperates your day-to-day life in a way, and it's difficult. So I just want to put that out there, you guys, that if you are a recent grad and you're having a tough time and you don't really know where you want to go, that's totally normal. That's what everybody feels. I think there are very few people who jump out of art school and know exactly what they want to do immediately. Or if they know exactly what they want to do, I don't think a lot of people know exactly how to go about doing it, at least not right away. I mean, I think it definitely takes a lot of practice. A lot of it is just plain and simple experience. So jump into the chat box, ask me your questions, your deepest, darkest fears about life post art school, or you can just listen to me lecture to you for the next hour or so. So this is the reason why I put together this page, is because I just felt that this is something everybody needs to talk about. Okay, Raphael is saying, how much does the institution you study influence in your success after graduation? There are a lot of factors to consider, like the school itself, alumni, location, etc. That's a great question, Raphael. I mean, I think that it depends on the field, actually. For example, if you are going to be a freelance illustrator, nobody cares when you went to school. It does not matter. They just want to know, can you get the job done? Do you have a portfolio that fits the job that I'm doing? They don't care if you work in freelance illustration. And I also think in other places like advertising and stuff, like if you work for a bigger company and stuff like that, they just want to see the portfolio. They want to see the work. And I think what matters is just get the degree, okay? Like as long as you get the degree, they don't care what grade you got spring semester, junior year in your drawing 2 class. It just does not matter, okay? But if you want to teach college and you want to work in academia, where you go to school actually really does matter. Not so much undergrad, but your graduate degree. I know that a lot of schools really look for particular graduate schools when they hire. And sometimes you will get somebody who slides by and they went to a more obscure school. So I'm not saying that all of this is definitely true. I mean, there's definitely an exception for everything that I'm gonna tell you guys. But in academia, it really matters. I think in terms of alumni, it's a little bit helpful in that if you see alumni from the same school and you meet in a professional setting, you immediately have something to talk about. So if I meet somebody at an opening and I discover, oh, wow, we went to the same school, all of a sudden we can start saying, oh, yeah, remember that professor? Oh, yeah, I had their class. And so it is a very easy way to start a conversation. Sometimes I will be at an event and I just have no idea how to talk to people. I'm like, so how's the weather, you know? But if it's an alum, it's very, very easy to do that. And so the thing about the institution is that you will see some people who go to very prestigious schools who are not doing much. And you will also meet people who went to schools that do not have big names that did exceptionally well. So for example, those of you guys who are really worried about the school you attend, because I think some of you guys might actually not be post-grads, and that's fine if you guys want to just hear about this topic. I think it's a great topic to talk about, but you should read, there's a book by Frank Bruni. I'll type his name into the chat box. It's Frank Bruni, and he's an op-ed writer at the New York Times. And he wrote a really good book, and I totally cannot remember the title, but it's something like where you go is not who you are. And so what he's trying to say is that the institution does not determine your career path or your success. And so there's a story he tells at the beginning. He says that two people who showed up at the same law firm, one of them went to like Yale Law or something like super prestigious. And then another person went to a school that was not as prestigious, and yet they both ended up at the same law firm. So it's case by case, but I really think that the characteristics that matter more is, can you hustle? Can you connect with people? Can you communicate verbally? To me, that's more important than the actual institution. Okay, so Ming Huang is saying, how do you know if you can make a career in art? I mean, Min, I don't think you can really know until you actually like give it a shot and see how it goes. I will say that you don't get results quickly. I mean, I was giving a lecture the other night to a group of people about business tips for artists. And one of the things I really tried to stress to them is, look, you can do all these things, but these things take time to simmer. You can't do all the things on your list and be like, oh, I'm going to get like instantaneous results. You won't. I mean, a lot of the things that I felt like progress in my career took years. I mean, like I would make contacts and then nothing would happen for 2 years. And then all of a sudden it would really pop up. And so you never really know. But my feeling is that if you try it for a year and you're miserable, you're not cut out for it, because you have to have enough drive and passion that overrides all of the crap you have to deal with. Actually, I was talking to one of my students the other day, and they said to me, oh, for the longest time, I was totally convinced I wanted to be a fine artist. And then they said that they spent the summer in New York, and they ended up feeling just really disillusioned about the way that the New York gallery scene functions. And so they said to me, oh, well, now I really am thinking about comics and illustration. And I said to them, look, it's like every field has its problems. You just have to find the field that you are passionate enough about that you're willing to put up with all the crap. Because, I mean, teaching's the same way. There's parts about teaching that I don't like, but for me, the rest of it overrides that. I'm okay putting up with those things, because trust me, I've got stories. Raphael is saying, please make a video about art schools versus universities versus art academies. That's a good topic, Raphael, but I actually don't think I can make a video about that because I do have an affiliation with an art school. And so I don't know that I could talk about that without giving a really biased opinion. And I just, for professional reasons, really want to stay neutral in terms of my opinion of different schools. You guys will probably notice that when I stream online that I never give opinions about particular schools because I think that's unfair, and I don't talk about the school that I teach at because I also feel like that's inappropriate. So I try to stay really neutral. However, if you guys have other professional development topics that you would like for me to address, let me know in the chat box. You guys can make comments on our channel. I'm always looking for more content. And actually, for you guys, we just added a bunch of new pages. So this is a page that actually might be really useful for some of you guys, which is how to write an artist statement. Because I realized after I asked my senior seminar class, which is basically like a pro development class about what to do post-grad, because I gave them an assignment, I asked them to write an artist statement, and it occurred to me afterwards, oh my God, they had no idea how to do this. Like, wow, I needed to give them more guidance, actually. And so after I gave that assignment, I was like, wow, I need to put something online about this. So there actually is a live video with the artist statement. So that way you guys can get my tips. I also have examples of different versions of artist statements, so you can refer to that. So I hope you guys will check that out at some point. Karen is asking, if you want to be an illustrator and make a career out of that, do you recommend going to art school? I mean, I get a lot of people asking about, well, why do I need to bother going to art school? Because, I mean, unfortunately, at least in the US, art school is not cheap, and it's getting more and more pricey every single year. And it's very frustrating because there's so many people who want to go and it's just a financial problem. And so I understand that it's like, wow, you don't want to put down that kind of money if you don't have to. But I think, Karen, the difference for me in terms of going to art school versus learning on your own is that art school is the one opportunity you're going to have to be immersed in an artistic community for a long period of time. Like, a lot of people will go and they'll do an artist residency, and those are great. Like Lauren Welch, who's a teaching artist at Art Prof, she and Eloise, who's another teaching artist, they both did this residency. They did all this cool work and they connected with all these other artists, and that's wonderful. But the thing is, the residency only lasts a few weeks. And so after that, you're done. Whereas art school is 4 years. Now just picture the type of relationships you build over a 4 year period. It's much more substantial than people you're at an artist residency with for just a month or so. And so for me, it's really about the artistic community that you probably will not get an opportunity to be around that many people who are really into art. And also, I think that's extremely stimulating, because I know that if I hadn't gone to art school, I would definitely not have pushed myself remotely as hard. And so just like the sheer pressure of everybody around me and the teachers, I mean, I would never have met people like that in my life before I went to art school. Because when I was in high school, I never met an artist. I know that sounds weird, but I never did. I mean, to me, an artist when I was in high school was some dead white guy in an art history book. Like, that's who I identified as being an artist, because I just didn't have the connections for that. I mean, I think it's very funny when I think about the way my kids are being raised, because my husband and I are both artists and we went to the same art school. And so basically everybody that steps foot into my house that I like interact with is an artist in some form. And so that's like all they ever see. But the thing is, in art school, I met like real living, breathing artists who are like doing it right now. And that was so powerful for me to have those role models, to know, okay, these people are alive today, they're doing it today, right now, and they're making it happen. Like that made it so real. And I guess for me before, it just didn't feel that way. I don't know, maybe things would have been different if I had had the internet when I was growing up, because I didn't have internet in high school. I mean, I couldn't like, you know, stalk other high school students and check out the competition, which I'm sure I would have been doing like every second of every day had I had the internet. But I think, Karen, it's the people. That's what makes an art school. A lot of people look at schools and they're like, oh, well, I didn't really like the dorms and the cafeteria didn't have very good pasta. And like, yeah, that's nice to have, but that's cosmetic. I mean, you've got your whole life to eat pasta, but like connecting with all those people, you don't have your whole life to do that. Okay, Min Huang is saying, I'm interested in being an architect. I will appreciate if you could give a brief comment about that career or a video. Okay, well, I am not an architect, so I cannot give you really precise advice on how to do that. But I will tell you that if you want to be an architect, you must get a degree. You cannot be a self-taught architect. There is an exam that you have to take. You have to be licensed to be an architect. The thing that I would say about architecture that I'm very conscious of, my friends and my students who are in architecture, is that it's a very collaborative field. I mean, I think every field of visual arts is about the community and the people. That's hugely important. You cannot be an artist by yourself by any means. But the thing about architecture is like you cannot do it without other people. Like, for example, with painting, I can make a painting by myself. Like, I don't need other people's help to do that. Now, as far as getting it into a gallery and getting the work out there, that for sure, you need a whole community of people to help you with that. But as an architect, you really do have to think in terms of a team. And so I would imagine being an architect, a lot of it is about just having really good communicative skills, that you know how to work with other people, you know how to communicate your objectives and how to inspire people and how to work as a team. I would imagine that's very, very important. So who knows, maybe someday when I have my art prof empire, we will have lots of videos about architects. But I mean, what I would suggest if you are into architecture, there's so many practicing artists today who you can look at. And of course, architecture has an incredible history, but I just sort of can't believe that a lot of people don't look at historical architecture. Like if I throw around a bunch of like stereotypical art history architects to my students today, a lot of people just look at me like, what, are you crazy? I'm like, Mies van der Rohe, Bauhaus. Like, I actually will bring up Frank Gehry, who is a very, he's like the eminent architect of today. I'll type his name into the chat box. And Frank Gehry, he's an architect. And my students are like, what? I'm like, guys, how can you not know about this? Or like Zaha Hadid, who actually just passed away. Actually, Ian Pei passed away as well. Wow, I feel like there's been a lot of tests in the architecture field lately. But I also think the thing about architecture is you really have to experience it. Because, I mean, I think paintings, absolutely, you need to experience them. But architecture, it really just sort of takes over your whole body. I mean, my thought about architecture, and this is probably like a totally romanticized version, I just feel like being an architect must be like the biggest power trip. Like that must just be the most amazing thing, is to like have this structural idea in your head, and for people to build this like monumental structure is just extraordinary. And I would study different buildings. Like for example, I'll type this into the chat box, the Pantheon in Rome, Italy, is an incredible structure. It doesn't look that great when you look at the art history books. I mean, it looks okay. It's not like it looks terrible. But the thing is, when you actually get in there, it's just, it transforms you. Like, I'm not a religious person, but I felt like when I stepped into a lot of the basilicas in Rome, I was like, oh my God, I believe. Like, it was just the most incredible experience. Like, I never thought that being in a building could feel so emotional. And that was very startling to me as an artist. So Min Huang, what I would say is just really take the initiative to educate yourself. Because I think I hear a lot of students, they say, oh, well, I really want to be a comics artist. And then I say, oh, okay, well, what comic artists are you reading? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, how can you want to be a comics artist and not take the initiative to find really good comics to read? And so I think that goes for any field. Like if you want to go into metalsmithing, look up contemporary metalsmithing, look up the history of that. I just really wish that people would take more initiative to really learn about not just the past, but also the present. Because I feel like to understand the present, you have to know what happened in the past. And so I'm always telling students, look, you guys, don't just go on Instagram to find artists. I mean, Instagram is fine. It's very helpful. But the thing is, Instagram doesn't cover everything. And there's a lot of amazing things in art history and contemporary art that you may not find very easily on Instagram. I mean, maybe it's there, but it's probably like really buried. All right. So if you guys are just joining us, we are talking about life after art school. And I'd love for some of you guys to jump into the chat box, pick my brain, let me know what you guys want to talk about. I am going to give you the totally unfiltered version. I'm going to tell you what it's actually like, because everybody else out there won't tell you because they're too busy looking perfect and happy on social media. And I really, okay, I'm sorry, I have to go on a rant here. I think that is such a disservice to younger artists, because younger artists get this very curated version of what being an artist is. And I think it gives out this impression that if you're an artist, you just, boom, make great work. And that's it. You just show up and one day it happens. And it is so not like that at all. I mean, I have a lot of work that I make that I just don't show anybody because it's just really too embarrassing. And I have a lot of time when I'm knocking my head against the wall, and I'm doing that far more than I am congratulating myself. In fact, I feel like I never congratulate myself on anything. But I just really wish people would be more honest about what it's like. And actually, my number one, well, I don't know if it's my number one piece of advice, but one of the most important things I think about after art school is to cast a really wide net. Because Alex Rowe, who is a teaching artist at ArtProf, He does children's book illustration, and he's done illustration in many other forms. And he writes on the Life After Art School page, which you guys can find, oops, here, on professional development. And all these links are going to be in the video description below. He said that when he was in art school, he told himself, I'm going to illustrate books, only books, not going to illustrate anything else. And so he was like laser focused on that as a goal. There's nothing wrong with that. It's good to be focused. It's good to know what you want. But you don't want to do that at the expense of not acknowledging what else is available to you. And I think what I see a lot in art school is that certain majors, depending on the school, set up certain expectations that, okay, well, if you are, for example, an illustration major, the only valid form of that is get a children's book published or be an editorial illustrator, and you have to illustrate for the New York Times or the New Yorker. That's like the checklist. Oh, and you have to move to New York City afterwards, which, by the way, I am now telling my students, look, unless you have a lot of money stored away, I actually don't recommend moving to New York City because New York City is so expensive. I mean, it's better to go when you're single than when you have kids, obviously. But the thing is, with the internet now, you really don't have to live in New York City. I would say in the 80s, yes, you had to be in New York City because there was no other way to have that visibility. And that was when people were like literally lugging around physical portfolios and going to offices and meeting with art directors. You don't have to do that anymore. So what I'm saying to a lot of my students right now is, look, if you want to go to New York City right away, that's fine. I mean, go ahead and do it. But I have a lot of really sort of scary stories of students doing that and having a very difficult time. And so what I'm telling them now is, look, when you first get out of school, just move to like a smaller city, like a city where the living expense is not that high, where you can actually afford to rent a studio. Because in New York City, it's like, oh my God, paying rent for an apartment, paying for a studio, and then you have to have a job to pay for all those things. I mean, the joke in New York City is that you're spending all your time and money on a studio that you don't have time to use. And so I tell students, like, do that for a few years, get some experience, and then go to New York City. Because I think it's one thing, if you have family in New York City and you have like a whole support network, I feel like that makes more sense. Or if you have parents who can help you out for a little while, I think that's fine. But if you are like totally on your own and you go to New York City with no job and no plan, I think that is very, very risky. Now, this is case by case. I mean, maybe some people, that's like an adrenaline rush. For me, I could not do that. I am too conservative about having a place to live and having money and stuff like that. So that's not something that worked for me. It's just that if you guys hear a lot of pressure from people, you have to move to New York. You don't have to. I mean, you can if you want, but it's not going to determine your career. And I feel like when I was in art school, that's how it was presented to me, that like, oh, if you don't move to New York, you're destroying your career. And that's not true at all. Okay, Raphael is saying, I want to be a contemporary artist, but I find myself getting more and more interested in older classical styles, portraiture, still life, like the old masters. Is there still a market for it? I mean, Raphael, I think there's a market for everything all the time. I mean, I think it just really depends on what part of the market you want to target. Like, I would say if you want to show in a Chelsea, Manhattan art gallery, there probably isn't so much a market for that type of work. But if you are willing to step outside of that and cast a broader net, I mean, I see people selling all types of work everywhere. So I think it's really a matter of finding your market. Like, if you can find the right place and the right community that's going to be receptive to that type of work, you absolutely can do well. I mean, so much of it is just how you present yourself. And I don't think that there is necessarily, well, here's the thing. I think the thing about the art world is, my feeling is that it functions a lot like the fashion world. Like, what is cool right now? What is trending right now? What is new? And so you will find that certain artwork, I think, makes an impact depending on the context within which it emerges. So an example I would give you is Eric Fischel. I'll write his name in the chat box. Eric Fischel. So he is a figurative New York City painter. And Eric Fischel, I mean, he's prominent enough that he's like in the art history book, okay? Like, he is definitely sticking around for art history. But the thing is, he came around when figurative painting was not cool. Like, it was during like the time of the abstract expressionists, and painting the figure during that time period, that was like the kiss of death. Like, that was not what you did. And so then when Eric Fischel came about, all of a sudden he like resurrected figurative painting. And I think Eric Fischel really paved the way for people like Johnny Seville and John Curran and Julie Heffernan and Lisa Yuskevage. I'm probably mispronouncing their name, but I think that if you think about Eric Fischel, who's a figurative painter, like, what if Eric Fischel got started now? Would he have had the same impact? Maybe not. Who knows? You really can't tell. And so I think that's why anytime I talk about contemporary art in our history, I always want to talk about the context. I want to say, okay, well, the Renaissance came about in Italy. What was happening historically at the time that fostered that reaction? Because everything is a reaction to everything. Think about the Renaissance, okay, in Italy, was followed up by Mannerism. And I really think Mannerism, which was a very strange art movement, like, everybody looks very worried and anxious in a Mannerist painting, very different than the very stoic, very serious images of the Renaissance. Mannerism was a reaction to that. And so everything is a reaction to everything else. And so I think, Raphael, you just have to find the right place for it. But if you want to say, I want to be showing in this community at this time in this museum, you probably will have to bend more towards a trend, or you have to get very lucky, or, I mean, it really varies. I don't want anybody here to think that I'm like trying to put down the law about how things work, because from artist to artist, it varies tremendously. All right, so Bond Blue is saying, I'm most worried about is the salary. There's obviously a ton of competition. My parents, who are Chinese immigrants, are really skeptical about artists' ability to make livings after they graduate. I'm currently in school to become a data scientist. I'm looking to minor in something fine arts related. I mean, I think the difference is that if you want a career in fine arts, it's not that you can't make money doing it, because obviously a lot of people do, and there are some people who do very well. I mean, that's not everybody. That's a small percentage of people. There's a lot of people out there trying to do it who are not having super successful careers. But to me, the biggest difference is that if you do a career in the fine arts, there is no set path. There's no step one, step two, step three, boom, you're a successful artist. Whereas if you guys think about medical school and law school, those are all very specific career tracks that tell you exactly what you need to do. Like, if you want to go be a doctor, you do pre-med, then you go to medical school, and then you do residency, you might do a fellowship, and then you maybe open your own clinic or you work at a hospital. That's it. If you want to be a lawyer, you take the LSAT, and then you get into a law school, and then you take the bar exam, and that you get hired by a firm or you set up a practice. And there's no end of need for lawyers, because people have all kinds of uses for that. And so that's like a never ending a need for people to have the lawyers. And so the thing I think that distinguishes art is that you have to make the path. You have to decide what's next. And that is the part that I think is very hard for people, is in some ways, I'm not saying medical school is easy, oh my God, because it sounds like so hard and stressful, but you don't have to think after medical school, what should I do next? It's like, yes, you have to do residency. Like, you cannot be a doctor and skip over residency. It's not like you get to pick it, you have to do it. And so there is, I think, for a lot of people, a lot of comfort in that, like knowing this is what you do next. And when you're an artist, nothing is predetermined. And what works for Sarah is not going to work for Beth. And it's very hard, because I think that there are certain positions where there's only so many places for that, especially in academia. Like, there's only so many full-time college teaching jobs. Whereas I think being an illustrator is a little bit different, because being an illustrator, you really can carve your own place. I mean, I've always felt that I was so happy not to be a professional athlete, because what a bummer that there's only one Olympic medal in that one particular slalom. And if you don't win that gold medal, that's it. And you just don't matter, because nobody cares who wins silver. Well, I don't know. They probably do. I'm just trying to talk about it in the most shallow level possible. But that's one thing I do like about being an artist, is you can carve your own place. But the thing is, carving your own place is hard, because you have to have initiative and you have to be willing to try out a lot of different things. And what I have seen a lot with postgrads is I've actually been helping a lot of my students and giving them advice about what to do to get a job. And I actually sent one of my students a job listing because I saw it and I was like, oh, this would be perfect for you. And they wrote back to me and they said, well, I don't really know if I'm qualified. I don't know if I'm good for every single one of these skills. And I said to them, okay, two things. First of all, just apply. Like, worst case scenario, you get turned down. Like, that is not a problem. Like, no skin off your back, okay? Second of all, so much of what you learn is on the job. There's so many jobs that I have taken where I had, okay, the basics. Like, obviously, I'm not going to get hired to, like, be an engineer if I have no engineering degree. But I think a lot of it, you just learn as you're doing it. And I have to say that I definitely have been in situations where I've been asked to teach a class or teach an assignment or cover a certain topic in my class. And I'm like, oh, I don't really remember that so well. Or it's like, oh, it's been 15 years since I did that in art school. And so I would have to go and do my own research. I'd either have to find somebody who I knew was better at a certain technique. Like, I'm always calling people. I'm like, hey, you remember how to use those registration pins? And like, there's always like little things like that. And so again, that's why this idea postgrad of why you need to have an artistic community. You have to have all these people that are going to help you. And sometimes it's not even the people who are going to like make or break your career. It's things like your framer, a museum installer that you know who can give you advice on particular hardware. Your framer is actually very important, because your framer, I think, really you have to aesthetically agree. Like, I love my framer. He's got such a good eye and I really trust him. I feel like if I didn't have that trust with my framer, I would be really nervous to plunk down all that money for those frames. And then even things like, I used to get my slides developed at this local place, and the guy there like totally knew me because I was there like all the time. This is in the olden days when you had to like develop slides and everything. And it's like, I really appreciated that context. Like, really having that relationship is very, very important. So if you guys are watching, please jump into the chat box, pick my brain, ask me anything you guys want about life after art school. And if you guys have not seen the link to the new page, I am still working on it right now, and I'm going to be adding more content eventually, and I'm going to be adding a couple of videos, probably this one as well. But check it out, because I feel like there's a lot of basic advice that some of you guys might find very helpful. The other thing that I think is really helpful that a lot of artists don't do, and actually the person who gets credit for this advice is Eloise Sherrod. She's a teaching artist here at Art Prof, because we were having a staff meeting, we were brainstorming about, okay, what kind of advice do we want to give people about life after art school? And she said to me, I think it's very important postgrad to connect with somebody who has at least like 15 years and more professional experience than you. Because I think it's great to have peers, people who are your age, who you can talk to, because they're in the same boat. Like, they totally understand your situation. But the thing is, at the same time, it's so helpful to talk to somebody who's older, who actually has an objective point of view on things, if anything, just to reassure you that it's not the apocalypse. And so I say to a lot of my students, listen, who is your hotline? Who are you gonna call when you are in a really tricky situation work-wise and you don't know how to deal with it and you can't ask your parents? I mean, I would say to you guys, unless your parents are like professional architects and they own their own architecture firm and you're trying to make it as an architect, don't listen to your parents. Like, they're not gonna give you good advice. Like, I had another student who's like, oh, my mom really thinks that I should hold out my comic for a traditional publisher. My mom thinks that I shouldn't put it online as a web comic. And I was like, why are you listening to your mother? Like, that is terrible advice. So it's like, don't listen to your parents unless they are actually professionals in that field. So I would just say, identify who those people are that you can talk to, because sheesh, I feel very lucky that I feel like I have at least one, two, I feel like I have like six people who are older than me who I do go to for advice. And they make life so much better. It's like I will go and I will talk to them and I'll say, this is what I'm really struggling with and I'm having a really hard time with this. And they're so great because they're so chill about it. And that makes me feel better because they go, no, don't worry. You do this, this, and this. And I actually had a situation where I was sort of bullied at a teaching job I was at by these senior faculty. And I was like traumatized by this. Like, this was so awful. And I was so upset after that incident. And I was like, is this normal? Like, am I just being whiny about this? Like, is this my problem? And so I called one of my former professors and I explained the situation. And I was like, am I wrong? Like, am I just a really bad teacher and I really messed up? And they were so reassuring, said, no, Clara, this is wrong. Nobody deserves to speak to you that way. This was so inappropriate. And I felt so much better after I talked to them about it because they just were able to give me a lot of perspective on the situation. So I know sometimes when you're in art school, you sometimes it's very easy to like take your teachers for granted because it's like they're there all the time. But then it's like when you get out of art school, it's like somebody just pulls the rug out from under you. All of a sudden, this community that you're so used to having is gone. It's like you have to make the effort to actually keep in touch with people. And so I would really recommend that you guys definitely do that. And then the other thing I would say is just try not to succumb to the pressures of what other people are doing, because I think it's really easy to feel like, oh, well, everybody else is moving to New York City. I'm not going to be as successful because I'm choosing to stay in Illinois instead. And I think there does become this point where people are like, oh, well, if you're not working at Cartoon Network and you got a major in animation, you're a failure. And the thing is, you guys, everybody carves their own path. I mean, I didn't think I was going to be a teacher. I had no idea. The only reason I ended up teaching was that when I was an undergraduate student, I used to teach art at the summer camp. And when I got out of school, I looked at my resume, and that really was the only work experience I had. And so eventually I ended up teaching at a private elementary school in Boston, and I loved that job. That was a great job. And actually, I think that if I had wanted to be like a career elementary school art teacher, I easily could have stayed at that job for the rest of my life. It's just I had this itch. I knew I wanted to teach college, and so that's why I ended up going on and getting my master's degree. But I would just say, you guys, be open and be flexible to stepping outside of your career goals. I'm not saying let go of them. I'm just saying you shouldn't have total tunnel vision when it comes to your career because you might actually end up really missing out on some great opportunities. It's hard to say, and it depends person to person because I definitely have tried things where I thought, oh, this is not going to work out. Like, I actually did. I feel like I did like one illustration gig after school because I just wanted to give it a shot. And I remember I like put together the stuff and I sent out postcards. I mean, I know that people are still doing that, but this was like before the internet became very prominent. And I remember I did that one editorial illustration gig. I mean, I got paid like so little for it because obviously I was really young and experienced. And after I did it, I was like, I really didn't like that. That was not fun for me. And I thought to myself, do I really want to push myself to do all this for something that I don't enjoy at all? And so it's okay to just like dump something if you're not happy with it. In fact, I have to say, you guys, there is no shame in just starting over and doing something else. Like, actually, somebody I know who actually got their MFA and went and got their terminal degree and everything, they went to art school. They told me that they were, I think they were working at an art company, like doing marketing or something like that. And they were trying to have an art career, but then they said that one day they just dropped everything and went to culinary school. And now they run this like really successful local bakery. And I was like, good for you. That's great. And they were so much happier that way. So that's the other thing, is that you don't have to feel that you need to hold on to an artistic career unless it's actually something you still want to do and that you're still excited about. Because the funny thing about running Art Prof is that it's a crazy amount of work. And it's very hard because we have very few resources. We have like the world's tiniest budget. We run on like practically nothing. But the thing is, I love it so much that I don't care about any of that stuff. Because my new feeling about choosing jobs, because I am so busy, I have to be very selective about it. When I was younger, I said yes to everything. I can't do that anymore. So now my stipulation is that it either has to pay very well or it has to visibly advance my career. And I mean visibly, not just like, oh, there's another line on my exhibition history. My CV is 6 pages long. I'm fine. Okay. I don't need to add another line to that resume. If you're younger, that's a little bit different. But the third reason why I would do something is if I love it so much that I don't care what the situation is. And so now that I'm doing that, I'm so excited and I like bolt up every morning, like so excited to do what I want to do. And of course, a lot of it's very hard. I'm not saying that this is all like a cakewalk, but what I'm trying to say is that you have to make sure it's something that really is worth it to you. Because I feel like I see a lot of people who like hang onto this stuff because they feel like they're doing it out of obligation. And actually, my favorite example of somebody changing careers, I'll write his name in the chat box. It's Robert Lang Origami. You guys should look him up. He's a really interesting person. And I saw him speak at Brown University and I had to go see him speak because I just think what he did was incredible. First of all, Robert Lang was a scientist for many decades and a successful scientist. Like he had published in all these journals and I don't know his whole CV, but the point is he did very well as a scientist. And then one day he dropped it all and decided to be an origami artist. It's like, what? Like how many people drop a very successful science career to become an origami artist? I mean, that's so crazy. And I remember when he spoke at Brown, I really, really wanted to ask him a question. And the thing is, I never do that. Like, I'm not somebody who goes to lectures and has lots of questions to ask, but I was like, I gotta ask him this. And so I asked him at the lecture, how did you have the nerve to drop your science career and start something like this? Because I could imagine that you'd be setting yourself up to be made fun of a lot for doing something so drastic. And he had such a great answer. He said, I knew that if I didn't do it, nobody else was going to do it. Because I guess there was like an instructional book that he wanted to write about origami, about a particular technique he had. And he said that if he didn't write the book, nobody was going to write the book. And I thought, wow, that is really cool. And to a certain degree, that's sort of how I feel about Art Prof. I'm like, look, if I don't do it, nobody else is going to put up this version of what I think it's going to be. I'm not saying I'm like the only person online doing all these tutorials, but I'm the only person that's going to do it from this particular perspective, which is as a adjunct professor coming out of academia. So the thing about Robert Lang is now he is like internationally renowned origami artist. I mean, look him up. It will just blow your mind. And he's done all kinds of things for like NASA. Like he's designed all these things that like fold up and out for these NASA missions and everything. It's really, really interesting. So, if you guys find after art school that it's not working out for you, it is totally okay to do something else. I know somebody else I met, it was an alum from my school, and they were a film major. And I guess they worked for a little while as like a film producer, and they worked on a bunch of shoots and everything like that. But they said after a while, it got really discouraging, and I guess they weren't really excited about the work anymore. And so they dropped it and went to law school. And now they're a lawyer, and I talked to them, and they were like, yeah, I love it. It's great. It's perfect for me. And so I just think that the cast a wide net, really opening your eyes to your options. Like, for example, I think a lot of people just think about the skill they went to art school for. And that's fine. Of course, you want to start there. But the thing is, I think a lot of people have many more skills than that. Like, for example, I was talking to a student the other day, and they said, oh, well, I speak fluent French. And I was like, that's a big asset. You should definitely think about how you can incorporate that into your skill set. I actually think it's very helpful post-grad if you can really hone your writing skills. I mean, it's going to help you as an artist, but I think that that in itself is a skill. And I definitely know people who have worked in marketing, like they had a marketing job, and maybe that wasn't what they wanted to do in terms of an art career, but the marketing job gave them the skill set to be able to market their own artwork. And so there's a lot of crossover. And I think I would never make the assumption that there's nothing to be learned from any job. I mean, yes, some jobs can be miserable, some jobs can be incredibly challenging, but I think about all the jobs that I've had, and I think they have all prepared me in a lot of different ways because my feeling is that every job you have gives you a new set of skills, and all those skills are going to the same pot. You're not getting negative skills. I mean, I said to somebody else, because there's another recent grad, they were a film major, and they said, you know, I'm thinking about just like starting from scratch and learning this new skill. But I don't really want to do it because, oh my God, I'm starting over. And I said, don't look at it that way. You're not starting over. You're just adding more to the pot. Like everything that you have doesn't go away because you're starting a new skill. You're just adding more to that. So I would say, you guys, we got a few more minutes. So if you guys have more questions about life after art school, jump into the chat box. Let me know what you guys are thinking. And I'm happy to answer any of your questions. And then the last thought I want to leave you guys with is this idea of a cold call, because I think a lot of people don't realize that you can do this. I think a lot of people, they think, oh, well, if there's no job listing, there is no job. And that's not necessarily true, actually. I mean, yes, if there's a job listing, it's a lot easier that way. But I have seen oftentimes, especially with teaching, if you send somebody like a really polite email and you just say, hi, this is my name. I'm interested in potential teaching positions, and you give them your information and you persistently remind them over time that you're available. I mean, not like every week, like I mean like every 4 months. Like you don't want to be annoying. But I actually have gotten teaching jobs that way because I sent out a bunch of cold calls, and you can get in because, especially with teaching, oftentimes people will go on maternity leave, they'll go on sick leave or something like that. And in that situation, a school is really struggling because they're like, oh my God, we have to hire somebody right away. We didn't have a lot of notice. Who are we going to hire? They're not going to put out like a big listing and interview 18 people. They don't have time for that. And so what they're going to do is turn to their records and see, okay, who is here already who we can just call. And I have definitely been one of those people that they called just because I was in their file. So it does not hurt you guys, those of you who are looking for jobs, to look at schools, look at companies, whatever it is that you want to work, and just write some occasional polite emails telling people that you're around. Now, it can take a while though, because one of the teaching jobs that I got that way, I don't think I got hired until like a year and a half later. So it was definitely not immediate, but I think, actually, I can't remember. I think that might have been my first college teaching job. Either way, it was very, very useful, and I found it really, really helpful. Okay, so if you guys missed this, we are running a fall raffle. You can buy one ticket for $1, and you can win either a 30-minute portfolio critique from me. The value, by the way, is $200, or you can get all these art supplies. There's so many art supplies, you guys. Like, there's like all these sets of pens and pencils and printmaking stuff. I mean, it's awesome. Like, wouldn't you love to get that in the mail just for pledging $1? So, yeah, you just pledge on our Patreon. So, I'll show you guys, that's the link here. And what you can do is maybe just go to the Fall Raffle page, which is on the front page of artprof.org. So just go there. You guys can see how to donate on Patreon. And you only have to donate $1 to enter. So you can get up to 5 tickets. So if you want to do that, you'll have more of a shot of getting that sweet-ass pile of art supplies, which I would love to have for myself. But no, I'm giving it out to one lucky person. And so I hope you guys will enter that and support us here at Art Prof, because again, all of our content is 100% free. You do not pay a dime to access any of our video tutorials, any of our professional development content. So please keep that in mind. Or you can do the traditional route and you can just purchase a portfolio critique from us, including myself, any of the other Art Prof teaching assistants. We also have Skype sessions. So if you want to speak to me over Skype, you can do that. You can do an audio call. You can also do a typed session on Skype. So if you want to chat with me in your pajamas, you can certainly do that as well. And then this is another thing that we just started offering, which is a website critique or a social media critique. So I know a lot of artists really struggle with their websites. And so if you want me to review your website and make recommendations for things to change, you can go to artprof.org, go to Pro Development section, and you will find a button for how to purchase an artist website or social media critique. And I know a lot of people really are at a loss for how to do that, because an artist website, it's like very specific. You can't just get advice from just anybody running websites. Like, you really need to know what it means to like practice as an artist. So you guys can check that out. Lahona Rampton is saying, is a drawing US only or worldwide? Oh, good question. The Fall Raffle is worldwide. So anybody can pledge, we will ship it to you. I know international shipping is so expensive, but we're gonna do it anyway because we have a really big international audience, and I just love that we get to talk to people in Nigeria, Mexico, Colombia, Sweden. I think that's amazing. So I definitely want it to be international, and we'll see who wins. So definitely think about it, you guys. It's $1, $1. And you could get a portfolio critique that we normally charge $200 for, or this big box of art supplies is just gonna like show up at your door. Like, wouldn't that be awesome? Like, what if you lived in Greece and this giant supply box showed up? Like, wouldn't that be really cool? Yeah, I would definitely do that, you guys. Like, it's $1, like definitely do that. Lahona's saying, woohoo, good advertising. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I love you international people. You guys are awesome. Like, I feel like one of the coolest things about having an international audience is I've learned a lot about how art education is taught in other countries. And it's so interesting to me to hear about that. In fact, I had a person who, I did a live critique piece, and it was about, it was this image of an Indian bride, and the student that did it was Indian American. And so they were talking about Indian tradition and trying to sort of revolt against that. And there's all these things about Indian culture and Indian weddings I have no idea about, but there were actually like two people on the stream watching who were from India, and they were like explaining all these things to me. And I was like, this is amazing. So yes, I love our international audience. Leon Zahn is saying, appreciate the value you give to the community through this channel. I want to thank you, Clara. Oh, cool. Well, I'm so glad that you guys appreciate that, because I am like busting my ass to put all this stuff out. I mean, I'm not trying to guilt trip you, because I love working on this stuff, but it is very nice to feel appreciated. So let's see. Ju Young Kim. Awesome. From South Korea. I'd love to get a critique someday from Art Prof. Well, I would go pledge $1 on Patreon, and you might just get that $200 portfolio critique, which is pretty awesome. Oh, Leon Zahn, you're from Australia. Oh, that's so cool. Wow. See, isn't that incredible, you guys, that it's like just a few of you popped in and it's like Australia, South Korea. I don't know what other countries you guys are from, but if you're outside of the US, I'd love for you guys to jump in the chat box. Let me know where you're from, because I'm always so interested to hear that. So yeah, I mean, I think the Fall Raffle is gonna be awesome, because the thing that's really cool about our prof is that we do have a lot of companies that support us by giving us art supplies. And we have so many that there's like tons of art supplies. There's like Yupo paper, there's resin clay. Actually, you know what's in here? Let me see if I have it. Oh, maybe it's sitting over here. I was trying to find, I don't know where it is. It's somewhere on my shelf. But anyway, you can get my book. So it's a short book that I wrote. It's a pretty fast read. It's like, you could probably read it in an hour and a half, but it's my like practical tips for being an artist, student, and teacher. And so you guys can check that out as well. I mean, personally, I would get it just to get the Faber-Castell pit pens. It's like a big kit of them. And there's a speed, I don't know, it's awesome. Basically, you'll have a lot of fun if you win these art supplies. Oh, Lahona, you're from Canada. Awesome, so you're sort of close by to us in the US. All right, very cool. All right, well, thank you so much, you guys, for tuning in. And again, I hope all of you will pledge on the fall raffle. By the way, it closes Wednesday, October 30th. So you have to pledge before then. And the pledge charges go through on November 1st. And so then after November 1st, we will select the winner. And we'll probably do that in like a live video or something so you guys can see that. Sana Kuber, you're from Sudan. Oh my gosh, I don't think I've ever seen somebody from Sudan on our stream. Wow, that's amazing, you guys. I mean, sometimes I think technology is creating all these horrible problems for us, which, you know, unfortunately it is in some cases, but other times I just like marvel at the way we can talk to each other. I mean, that's really remarkable. So thank you so much, you guys, for tuning in, and I will see you guys next time. Bye-bye.